Words on Water. Words on Water.
Hi, Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop. It is an absolute delight and honor to be joined for this episode by Dr. Jackie King, Stockholm Water Prize Laureate in 2019. Thank you so much for finding some time in your busy schedule here in Stockholm to have a conversation.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm delighted that you're interested in the work we're doing.
Absolutely. Speaking of your work, I know a lot of listeners have seen the recognition this year, but I know a number of them probably have not and aren't familiar. Could you talk about your life's work, if you will, and your research and what why you've been selected for this award? And I know that's a good long story, but we have time.
I'm a freshwater ecologist, and I decided to have a career in research rather than in lecturing at a university or something like that. I have a PhD in freshwater ecology on rivers. So I went into a research career a little bit to begin with, because I was a married woman with small babies, and then I eventually moved into a longer research day. And one of the things I realised, that research money in South Africa is quite difficult to come by. You know, we're not blessed with huge amounts of money, and they required really that we did research on management orientated projects. And it was about the same time as I was getting to the point of wanting that to get full-day money, that we were starting to hear from around the world that rivers were in trouble.
And when was this?
This would be in the mid-1980s, that sort of time, perhaps a bit earlier. And eventually it was understood it was not just a matter of pollution. Some rivers were terribly polluted, that's for sure. But something else was happening that seemed to be nothing to do with pollution. And gradually we made the link with dams and water resource developments. They were bringing huge benefits to people. And we all like having water on tap. We all like having plenty of food on the shelves of our shops. But there was a cost coming up. And it sort of took us by surprise, because at that stage, up to about the 1970s, conservation and natural ecosystem thinking was still focused on looking after species. And we were just making that shift to looking after ecosystems, because then species would look after themselves.
If the ecosystem's healthy, the species will be
fine.
That's
right. Yeah. So here we were, suddenly realizing that, well, I won't say we had understood it earlier, but a wider body of people were recognizing that rivers are living systems. And if you do something to them, they react. Mm. It's the same as if we decide to change our diet. If you have less food, or you eat a different brand of food, or go into all the stodges and leave out the proteins, you'll change. You'll become a different person. You might become quite grumpy as well, I think. You know? And rivers are the same. You take away their flow, you dam them, you change the pattern of flows going down the river, you store the floods and just let a dribble come through. They don't like it. They will change. Mm. And this is what was happening. We were losing fisheries. We were losing floodplains. We were losing mangrove swamps and coastlines. And all sorts of things were happening. And we were losing potable water. Mm. Not only was this a problem because rivers morally should be there anyway, but they are also the support system for hundreds of millions of people around the world, whose livelihoods are very closely linked to healthy rivers. So I decided to have a look into this, and I put in a proposal to see if I could work in this field. And South Africa's Water Research Commission, which is a fabulous support system for us, all us researchers, took it up. They tasked me to look around the world and see what was going on with the world rivers. Mm. And some of the world's rivers were the ones that were crashing in South Africa. The rivers in Kruger National Park, our premier national park, were dying. Mm. So they asked me to look around the world, see what was going on, and then recommend what should be done in South Africa.
What were some of the other rivers that you looked at as part of that research?
I didn't look at specific rivers. You read the reports coming in from fishermen and from game fishermen and conservation authorities. I can't remember the names of the rivers now.
Sure.
But it was a general message coming from across the world that rivers were in trouble. And 2 weeks after I started the work, South Africa's National Department of Water Affairs phoned me and asked if I would help because they were planning dams on rivers across South Africa.
Mm.
They knew that some of our rivers were in trouble. So they said, can you help us by telling us how much water the river needs?
Mm.
And they were very strongly behind this, as was the Water Research Commission. And as I started the work, they gave strong moral support and financial support. There was quite a resistance to begin with. We were essentially inserting a new interest party, which was me, into an engineering and sort of political world. And we were inserting a new water user, the river, into areas where all of its water had already been allocated to others.
Mm.
So there was a lot of shuffling for position and sort of grumbling and everything. But we had the support of our government and Water Research Commission, and off we went. River after river around the country that was going to be dammed, we tried to work out how much water should stay in the river. And we adapted our method, we developed methods, adapted them, because each river provided a new problem.
Mm.
One of them had a sediment, heavy sediment load, so we needed a geomorphologist. Another one had migratory birds coming into swamps, so we needed an ornithologist, and so it went on.
Sure.
And gradually we pulled in social people as well, because we could see the close link between people and rivers.
Yeah, the communities around those
Absolutely.
Waterways, the people,
yeah.
how they use them,
yeah.
and
yeah, are they're using sort of medicine or herbs, grazing, water itself, sand, trees, construction materials, thatching, grasses, all of those things and more. And then if any of those things start to change, it affects their well-being, their household incomes, and their health.
Mm.
Some of the things could be changing was an increase in waterborne diseases, for instance. If very low flows meant that there were more mosquitoes in
sure,
the water.
Sure, water gets stagnant.
All of those sort of
yeah.
things. It's all linked.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get a free meal out of this.
So there is an ability to take, in some cases, take some flow, to divert some of that river, to do something,
yeah.
and the river can still be healthy.
Yeah. I'm not anti-development at all. I've benefited as much as anybody else from having a good supply of water and food. But I'm very pro-careful development, which is what we can do better now that we've got more insights into how rivers work. So what we've done, they've done it differently in different countries, but what we've done is said, what your river's going to be like in the future is a choice of society. We can offer you the benefits that a river will give you, and we can also offer you the costs that come with those benefits. And river by river around the country, we'll decide where the balance will be.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be different in different rivers. A river going through a national park will have most of its water left in it, approximately in the natural pattern of flows through the dry and wet season, and it will use a lot of water to keep that river in national park level standard. A river going through an agricultural area, we want the food, we will abstract more of the water, there might be a little bit more pollution going in from effluents and fertilizers draining in, that river will sit at a lower conservation status. And across South Africa, we developed a mosaic of rivers being held at different levels depending on what society expected from those rivers.
But at least all of the information and all of the impacts and all of the choices were put out for evaluation awareness.
We had a thing, we have over time developed what we call classification, which is simply that negotiation, basin by basin, on what status do you want different parts of that river system held in. You might keep the headwaters at an A conservation status, pristine, because they are the source water for that area. And then you might have a couple of tributaries you keep at A, so that migratory fish have still got somewhere to go to get up to mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And then other bits of that system might be B or C or D, you know, which are getting lower and lower in terms of their health.
Mm.
It doesn't mean they're dead. It just means they are not natural.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not trying to get all rivers to be natural. We're trying to get this mosaic going so people can use the water in different ways and in different amounts across the landscape.
Balanced.
Yeah.
And so this was really an approach and a concept, a method that was developed in South Africa. And then other places in the world have looked to that and adopted a similar approach, or you're hoping that more of that happens?
There were a couple of, back when I started, you could have probably counted on two hands the number of peat scientists working on this in the world. There was a handful, a few in America, one or two in Australia, a couple in New Zealand, me in South Africa, one or two in places like Norway.
Okay.
And so we were all going down parallel avenues, so to speak, and we started to keep in touch with each other. Eventually, we branched off on our own because the other countries were developed countries where most people had jobs and salaries and things like that. And we were completely in the opposite direction. We were in developing countries. A lot of people relied directly on the river. And we had to have the social aspects coming in, whereas they were focusing at that stage just on the ecological aspects.
Mm.
So we took off sideways a bit from most of the others and gradually got going in Africa and spread out eventually, starting in the mid-1990s, spread out across southern Africa and then across Africa and then across Asia.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was that like for you to see that? The spread of all of that approach and that science.
You know, you don't really understand what you're in the middle of at the time. Mm-hmm. You look back and go, oh my goodness. And I can remember sitting on a boat in the middle of the Mekong River and going, I'm on the Mekong, mm-hmm. Wow, I'm on the Mekong.
Right.
But it started slowly. It started because in 1994, we got our new first democratic government.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the middle of this process of the river dams.
Mm-hmm.
Water Affairs was pushing ahead of any requirement in law to look after the rivers, and we were going through that process. When the new government came in, the new Minister of Water Affairs tore up the old water law, which was iniquitous and unfair, and wanted to write a new one. And with the persuasion and discussion of between lawyers and ecologists and scientists, they wrote into the water law the right for the river to have a share of its water.
Wow.
Which was very visionary. Uh-huh. And our Minister of Water Affairs got the Stockholm Water Prize in 2000 for that water law.
Oh, okay.
So that put that water law with its two rights. There was only two rights for water in our water law now. One is for basic human needs, a daily amount for everyone for drinking, washing, and cooking.
Mm.
The only other right in our law is for the environment to have a share of their water.
Mm.
And every other water use is by licensing and permits, which can be reviewed and adjusted.
Sure.
So that brought us onto a world stage. First of all, we've got Nelson Mandela out there up front. We've got a new government. South Africa was feeling the gloom lifting, and then we put this new water law in place that was visionary, and it attracted a lot of tension. So immediately, I was being pulled onto a wider stage amongst the river basin management community and the funders of basin development by this exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up first leading a team for the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, which is small country in South Africa that was going to dam and divert water to the industrial heart of South Africa in Joburg. And then the World Bank people who took me into that pulled me into the Mekong, and then IUCN pulled me into Tanzania, and then we were in the Nile, and then we were up in the Himalayas in a court case between India and Pakistan, and then I was in The Hague giving testimony, and so it went on.
That's amazing. And yeah. What are your hopes for, you know, the future use of this type of approach?
Yeah. It's getting more and more sophisticated, and I think it should. Some people complain and say it should be simple, but I've never seen anyone require a dam builder to write down some simple instructions so I can build his dam.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see why managing a catchment and its river system should be seen as something that anyone can do after a couple of weeks training.
Right.
Ecosystems are far more complex than dams. So we are building models, and they are providing scenarios now which governments can understand what their options are for the future. If I build a dam there, this is what will happen to the river system and its people.
Mm.
If I do something else here in the basin, there'll be a different result in terms of the river and its people. So we are putting those kind of scenarios out there now. It's new kinds of information that people have never had, decision makers have never had before. So it is bringing gradually a more careful, balanced decision making into being. I think there's a lot of progress still to be made. In many cases, the ecological and social studies are at the end of dam decisions, and they should be at the beginning, guiding those decisions. So we've got a way to go, but I think we're doing quite well. In terms of how are we getting on with water in general, I would say we know the problems, we know how to fix them, and I've heard these messages over and over again this week. We know the problems, we know how to fix them, we've got the technology, we know what we need to do. All we need now is to shift governments and funders, the inertia that's there, which comes from a business as usual sort of process, and try and help them to adapt to a changing world where they can do things in a different way. And if they did, it would probably make things better.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you to have received this recognition and the Stockholm Water Prize?
There's two or three really important things. One of them is when the prize was announced, river scientists from across the world wrote to me and said, it's so right that this has happened now and shone a light on rivers. And so I gained an enormous amount of strength and happiness. And they said in so many ways, we are standing there beside you when you get that prize. We all feel as if we've won it. And that was lovely. A second thing that was particularly nice was all the young women who have come up to me at Water Week this week with tears in their eyes and said, we just love what you've done. Wow. It's given us strength and it's given us determination. And that's been so important. I can't say how it's important it's been.
There's the Stockholm Junior Water Prize contingent that's here.
Yeah.
And I can imagine how you're an inspiration to many of them. They're brilliant young people, but that really is shown like that path.
I think they can follow. And they're also an inspiration to us to see that even at school, they're coming up. You know, I talked to one young boy, I think it was for a different prize, not for this one, but he's here.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what made you go and do that? Whatever it was he'd done, I honestly can't remember. And he said, I had to walk 2 miles every day to get water. And I thought, there must be something different. Mm-hmm. We must be able to do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
At 15,
to have that,
your hats off to them. These are brilliant youngsters.
Absolutely.
And I think there's a lot of youngsters like that out there, if we can give them a chance.
Now, the Stockholm Water Prize does come with a monetary award, and I heard you speak the other day about that. You want to share your thoughts on it?
Yes, I didn't know there was a monetary part to the award until they told me, and that was amazing. And I very quickly decided that money belongs to Africa. And so I've not been able to get very far along the road yet, but I've got a logo. Uh-huh. I want to set up a trust, if I can, called Africa's Living Rivers, and offer to bring in people to mentor a country team to help them through the process of putting ecological and social planning at the beginning of basin planning rather than as a reaction to it.
Mm.
So we would see a country team, each one with a mentor behind them, not doing the work. The country team would do every bit of the work, and they would be left behind at the end of it as a resource for the country. That's what I'd like to do with the money.
Yeah.
Africa's Living Rivers.
I'm sure that you can accomplish that. you made a reference a few minutes ago to the the young women that have come up to you and talked about how you're an inspiration. Mm. You talked about how your work began in the 80s. I wonder if you could kind of share what it was like, being a female in that time in really a male-dominated kind of field.
Mm. It was difficult. I said in my opening plenary session, I met a lot of headwind.
Mm.
And I wasn't sure if it was because I was a woman or a biologist or just had a lousy personality.
It's not the latter.
So you maneuver. I maneuvered. I tried to learn their language. I tried to explain things to them in terms that related to their world and try to go across the gap of different disciplines. And should I share that little story
with
you?
I'd love to hear that story, yes. Yeah.
I have a little story which I've called Opportunity. And this is from those times when I first peeped over the wall of academia and saw this world of water managers and engineers, and I was going to have to penetrate that world and start to work on the management of rivers. So I decided that one way to do it would be to go to their conferences and just hear what was going on and the language they used and the sort of people they were and everything. So I appeared at my first conference and stood up to give my paper, and it was just a wall of suits in front of me.
Yeah.
And then the chair of my session stood up, and he said to this wall of suits, "There are three great lies in life. First great lie is that the check is in the post." And all the engineers sort of gave a little titter and a giggle. They recognized the situation. And then he said, "The second great lie is I'm from head office. I'm here to help you."
Right.
And they all howled with laughter, recognizing the situation again. And then he said, "The third great lie is some of my best friends are ecologists."
Oh.
And they howled with laughter.
Uh-huh.
And then most of them left the auditorium as I stood up to talk.
Mm.
So I talked to my depleted audience, and then I went away and I thought, what do we do about this? I can shout and rage and say you've insulted me, or I can try another approach. I can look for an opportunity here. I'll sidle up on this little problem like a crab.
Yes.
And sniff it out with my antennae and see what I can figure out. And then I thought, okay, I'm not the shouting type, so we won't go to plan A. I'll do the crab approach.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I started my little plan. So you fast forward a year and I'm back at the conference with another paper. And this paper is called The Difference Between Engineering and Ecological Hydraulic Models.
Mm.
An engineering model sort of models the coarse landscape to see how high, for instance, flood peaks will come so that they can build their bridges and roads higher than that. The ecological hydraulic model is modeling what the fish are feeling down there in the bottom of the water as they're fiddling around their rocks.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between these two models? How do they build from the same concept and produce different results for different purposes? So that was my paper, and I stood up to give it. And as I stood up, another figure appeared beside me. It was the man from last year.
Oh, boy.
And he was the co-author of my paper. And I thought...
You pulled him in. Yes, absolutely. I loved it.
It in a constructive way so that we actually ended up seeing each other's perspectives.
Well, that's a great approach to environmental management overall.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on the recognition. You've inspired a lot of people, myself included. I look forward to sharing this with everybody. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Travis. Thank you.
Words on Water.